And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. And again, thank you to Damian Meyer from Reitner, Hyten & Lewis, a great law firm. I'm not kidding you. They are phenomenal. And talk about litigation. If you want to rehear what we said, you can go to breakradioshow.com. That's breakradioshow.com. Go on Show Archive. Click on Law Talk, and there it is. All their great topics. So it's a great way to learn stuff and really learn stuff before maybe even call an attorney. So, but I always recommend call an attorney, and especially right now are Hyten & Lewis. And now, if it is the second Monday of the month from 3 to 4, a very important show for many different reasons is Understanding Autism, starring Kim Isaac and Paul Loudon. How are you guys?
Excellent.
Doing pretty good.
Wow, how was the flight from Houston?
Pretty full. Spring break filled up everything.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It is spring break.
Yeah.
Wow, that's... So everything was full and everyone's
There's
traveling.
There's people all over the airport, you know.
Wow.
Every suit on the plane was full for once.
Any people with tambourines? And remember... No, the Harry... No.
We didn't have any of them.
Okay. Anyway,
not these days.
Yeah, that's right. I haven't seen that in a long time. Okay, so we got a great show today, though. Monday today, of course, and there's going to be a surprise because tell us, Kim, what's happening with Understanding Autism because you are expanding. It's so popular.
We are expanding. We are adding a second hour, a second show that will air on the second Tuesday of every month from 3 to 4. And we're going to do a little sneak preview of that tomorrow.
This is great. Paul, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to, we're 1 hour earlier tomorrow, aren't we?
Tomorrow.
That's
we're,
right.
Yes, thank
just
you.
Just making sure we get that in there. Yeah. Tomorrow is actually the third Tuesday, but.
Right.
From 2 to 3.
Yes. From 2 to 3.
One time only.
Yeah. Yes.
A one time only sneak preview.
Sneak preview. But starting next month, it'll be the second Monday and the second Tuesday from 3 to 4 p.m.
That is so exciting because this is much needed to really dispel the myths of what's happening and also find solutions to very important, it's so important to whether you're kids, adults, families, friends, and am I right?
Well, it really affects a lot of people
in
the community. It's a lifelong disability, so it's really important that we understand and collaborate and share as much information as we can.
And that's why you are expanding. How excited are you? Let me ask you, Paul, first of all.
Well, I'm pretty excited, of course. I enjoy being here, so
and it
gives
great.
Me more time to talk about things.
And really share your experience because it's, there's nothing like really sharing one's experience with other people so they can relate. So it's not, we're not talking theory, we're talking practical.
Well, that's been some of the best feedback I've gotten back about the show is when someone writes in to Cam to tell them that that what I'm saying is a lot like what they felt and they just weren't able to put it into words the same way.
That is so invaluable. Kim, you agree?
I very much agree. I enjoy being able to provide a little bit of the theory and Paul being sort of the yin to my yang of providing experience. And I think we work really well together. And honestly, I'm excited to help lots of people. And I'm really excited that Paul's excited. We're just like really excited.
Wow, that's that's an exciting situation that you're talking about. Tell us a little bit, Kim, about your background too, just as a start.
Well, I have been in this field for over 14 years. And it sort of turned out that I've worked with the older population, teenagers and adults, for many of those years. And I really have a very strong heart for that population. There are more resources available now these days, but in past years, there really hasn't been very many professionals that were willing to work with adults on the spectrum or understood how to work with adults on the spectrum. So I felt there was a very special need, and I really thoroughly enjoy working with this population. I'm a certified RDI program consultant. I have a bachelor's degree in psychology, and I'm finishing up my master's in counseling studies this year.
That is fantastic. And Paul, you're 28.
Yes.
You were diagnosed at age 23 with Asperger's. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I'm actually going to go a little bit more into my background today than I normally do.
Oh, absolutely.
This is because today's topic, what we're going to be talking about, is being an adult with autism, the diagnosis and where you go. Similar to what our show was last week, but this is for the people who have it rather than parents or family of people who have it.
Right. And primarily. last month, if for those of you who weren't here, we talked about if you thought your child had autism or just received a diagnosis for your child on autism. And this month, just to sort of review that, we are going to be talking about if you're an adult that has autism or an adult that suspects maybe you have autism or you're having some things that are happening in your life with depression and anxiety that are being misunderstood by professionals.
Which is so important. I mean, people, if they're wondering, and Paul, you've said it many times, it's like no one really knew during a certain time frame what was going on, but you knew something wasn't quite right.
Yeah, I mean, one of the big things is that when I was younger, we moved around a lot. My dad worked in oil, so we moved, I'd say, about once every 2.5 years if you averaged it out. I spent kindergarten and first grade in Pakistan, second grade in Louisiana, third and fourth in Texas, fifth through eighth in Indonesia, ninth through 12th in Texas again. So we moved around a lot. And one thing that did is it made it a little more difficult to notice some of the challenges that I was having because I was being reintegrated into a new group continually. So it was sort of he's just moved. He's having a hard time getting along with new people. But during that time, I was diagnosed with ADD and depression and put on medication for both of them at different times. And while it made some difference to those people around me, I never really felt like it was helping me with the challenges I was having. I still had difficulty in school. I had significant difficulties in school. I still felt fairly depressed, but there were less signs of it to my parents, so the medication was probably helping somewhat. Then after high school, I went on to attempt to go to college here in Phoenix at the University of Advancing Computer Technology. That didn't work out so well. Moved back to Texas. Didn't have much success there. And eventually, at 23, I was diagnosed with Asperger's disorder. And one of the big things that a lot of people run into with a diagnosis is that it's a shock. It can be depressing or overwhelming because you've got this big thing now. Autism or Asperger's disorder is a big, significant, life-changing thing. But the fact of the matter is, and the way I saw it when I got the diagnosis, was that I had those problems for I don't know how many years. I was having difficulty in school since probably as far back as I can remember, that these problems were in my life for my entire life. The diagnosis wasn't a problem. It wasn't something new. It was the beginning of a solution, that it gave me the tools. You know, you can't get your car running again until you figure out that the radiator's leaking. You know, that the car is still not running until you know there's a problem. Once you know what the problem is, you can start working on it. And that's what it was for me, is I read about some of the symptoms of Asperger's in a book, and I went to see a specialist saying, look, I feel like I really relate to this. Can we talk about it? You know, can you test me or something? And then I was diagnosed. And for me, that helped with my depression immensely because I was still having the same difficulty with people around me, but it wasn't a why can't I get along with people? It was a now I know what's going on, I can start looking at the parts of it and the solution. And I think that's the message that I want to sort of bring out here, is that the diagnosis is a starting point. It's the beginning of a solution. It is not, it doesn't change anything for the worse at any point.
You know, I love what you said about that. It's a beginning of a solution, because some people might think, uh-oh, now it's the end of my whole existence somewhat and there's no hope. To you, it said, wow, now I know what's happening. There's hope. And you can move on and really understand what to do.
I think a diagnosis is the most hopeful thing that can happen to you if you're suffering from this sort of thing, because it tells you what you're working with. And before, you were in a state of mystery.
Wow, that Kim, do you see that too?
I do. I see it differently, definitely, with the adult population versus the parents I work with who have older children. It's a little bit different of an experience for the parents. It's hard for them to sort of frame it that way. But because we're talking about adults today, I have seen that, what Paul's describing, although he's been the first person to be able to articulate it so clearly from that perspective.
You know, that, Paul, you had Looked like you had some.
Oh, no, I just was thinking, you know, I'd like to help other people to see it that way, too. I mean, the parents as well, it gives them a starting point. That's one of the messages I want to try to get out continually with this show, is to try to help people to think of it this way.
Well, and something that I really focus on in the therapy work that I do and in consulting is, you know, everything is information. And when we take the information we get from our professionals, it gives us a direction on what the next step should be so that we can work towards improvements and quality of life changes. And the clearer that you are about the problems you have, the better opportunities you have to work on them.
And I would think if the parents learn to see it that way, they can frame it, it's a beginning to a solution, they're going to also set the example for their kids, no matter what age, and that can only lead to something good.
Definitely. I think that's a really important point. And I also want to say, you know, from the perspective of parents, I think, you know, it's a really tricky thing because for parents, it can be, depending on what age your child's diagnosed, it can be really scary, especially for people. Now, it's not so common these days because we hear about autism in a lot of different places, but it can be really scary for a person who's never even heard of it or doesn't really understand what it means. And I guess, though, what we're saying is this underlining message is you get this information, and taking it as such, as information, you can move forward to do research and, you know, figure out things that are going to be useful. And that's a more constructive way of using energy.
And, Paul, I would guess, we have about 1 minute before the break, that you probably felt a little bit more control of your life once you found what it was.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it just, for me, I had no idea why I wasn't succeeding the things I wanted to succeed at or able to interact in the way I wanted to interact. And this gave me a framework. It wasn't a solution, you know, it gave me a framework that I could look at and say, here's where I can start improving.
And there was a path that you knew you could create. And without a path, then who knows which direction, and that can cause confusion. And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with Kim Isaac and Paul Loudon, Understanding Autism. We'll be right back.
At Beer and Bomb and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birnbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Understanding Autism, starring Kim Isaac and Paul Loudon. We've been talking pretty much about Paul's story right now because it's so very valuable to know how you thought about the situation. And I just love what you said, beginning of a solution. That's like we were talking at the break. Is the glass half empty or half full? You look at it as half full.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's an important way to look at it, just in general. I mean, one thing you run into is, you know, there's some fear. If you're like me, I read about it, and I read an article about Asperger's disorder specifically, and I related to it very strongly. I read a description of what kind of problems they tend to have and what kind of things they see, and I was very, I don't want to say sure that was me, but I was sure that I had had very similar experiences to what they described, and I wanted to find out more and find out if that was me. And I know that while it wasn't the issue necessarily for me, I was just curious. For some people, it can be intimidating. Oh, I might have autism. You know, I'm afraid to find out. Hmm. And I think that's one of the important things about reiterating that finding out is a good thing, is that you shouldn't be afraid to go and talk with someone. That if you see that you relate, or someone around you possibly relates to these kind of descriptions, finding out more and possibly getting a diagnosis can only help. It can only help to improve the situation.
So what do listeners do right now who might be wondering if this might fit their situation, or they have a family member, a friend, someone they know that might fit the situation? What do they do? What's the first step, you think?
Well, I have a couple of answers to that. One is, if you're a person listening and you may know someone and maybe who fits the profile that Paul had just been describing, who may be afraid to seek out more information, you know, it might be a good idea actually to refer back to the show in the archives and maybe listen to it with that person in mind, just together, listening to it together. If you're a person that is listening who thinks that maybe if you're actually the person and think that you may have an autism spectrum disorder, we're going to talk about a couple of things that you may be able to relate to in order to go seek a diagnosis. And we wanted to talk about this because these, what we're calling the triad of impairments that are common to people who have Asperger's or autism spectrum disorders, they appear to varying degrees in these three categories. And so we want to talk about that a little bit to provide some education for a listener out there who is a person who's maybe wondering, fearful, unclear, you know, what this might look like. So we were going to talk a little bit about that right now.
Excellent. And of course, if they want to, should I give out the phone number if people
absolutely
have
we
question
want questions.
Okay,
yeah.
So if you'd like to call in, because you might be curious about right now, and 602-296-3632, 602-296-3632. That's 602-296-3632. And of course, the website that you were talking about on other shows that we've have in their archives is breakradioshow.com. So that's break, B as in boy, R-E-A-K, radioshow.com. Go to archive shows, look under Understanding Autism, and you will then see Kim and Paul right there and listen to them. So let's go right on to some of the things that you can talk about on this triad of impairments.
Right. Well, I think this is important to talk about these three categories, because as Paul was saying, I think there are people, if they don't know that they have Asperger's, they could appear to professionals or to others as depressed or anxious or even having that ADD type quality. So it's important to narrow some things down a bit and ask yourself some questions about yourself and your communication in these three areas. So
the three areas are...
I was trying to decide who's going to go. Okay, we have social communication. So social communication, what does that mean? If you have difficulty understanding gestures, nonverbal expressions, body language, that could definitely be a sign that you may have a difficulty in that area. You may not be aware of what is socially appropriate in different situations, or feel comfortable and confident about when to bring up certain topics within a dyad or a social group. You may not be socially motivated because you feel confused or you don't understand maybe an underlying context that might be going on. And I know Paul and I have talked about that. Actually, maybe you could talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, for the listeners, elaborate, what does that mean, socially motivated?
Well, a lot of it is that I mean, if you think about it, most of the things we do are socially motivated to one degree or another. They're in response to pressures from outside, expectations of family, expectations of friends, desire to make someone else happy, desire... I mean, there are obviously things that aren't socially motivated. I eat because I'm hungry. But a lot of our interactions and our more complex actions in life are socially motivated. And one of the difficulties I find I have especially is... putting a value on certain social things. I can spot when something has a degree of social significance in many cases, but it's very hard for me to guess beforehand how much social significance. I might know that a statement I say has the potential to be upsetting, but I may think that it's something only minorly upsetting and important to say and not realize that it's going to get someone so upset that they're going to respond in anger. I mean, it's very difficult to tell the degree to which people will react to things.
And that is pretty common for people on the spectrum, is understanding degrees of emotions and degrees of change. A lot of times I've seen with the younger kids, you know, when they're learning about emotions, they might be taught, this is happy, this is sad, this is mad. But, you know, within human faces and gestures, there's hundreds of degrees within those things. And sometimes it's really hard to monitor non-verbally the degrees of those things.
Well, and there's a lot of things that, like, I can spot tension, but is it angry tension? Is it anxiety tension? Is it so on? Is he just cold? You know, there are many reasons for why certain body languages can exist. And a lot of what you do learn is very strict interpretations of things. But a normal person has a lot more intuitive reaction to these things and is more flexible in their ability to quickly adjust and interpret social communication.
The rapid shifting. And I think part of this, too, though, is being able to process multi-channels of communication at one time. That can be very difficult for some people. And a lot of times, because language is, you know, is the most concrete thing, people on the spectrum tend to gravitate towards processing that piece of information first, when really we know that communicative intent is expressed 90% through things like nonverbal communication, intonation. You know, we learn over time to what degree. And because at this point, I think for adults, the communication is happening so rapidly that not only is it hard to process the multi-channels, but it's hard to process it at the rate that it's coming in.
So are you saying then that you can teach skill sets to people on the spectrum to be able to develop these?
Oh, yeah.
It can improve it greatly. Once you know what you're looking for, I mean, there are significant ways you can improve it.
And over time, I mean, if you think about with anything, like once you understand something and once you begin to practice it, under the guidance of a guide who's helping you do that, you become better. And actually the processing time that you need will actually change. So it's kind of a funny way of putting this, but if you want to learn to keep up with people interactively, you actually have to slow way down and break it all down first to ensure competence in those different areas before we can expect people to process so many complicated things at once.
So is it for you, Paul, when you started learning these new skills, was it also a matter of building sort of a database of experience to draw on, or was it something else?
There's a little bit of a degree of that, but honestly, at first I was trying to do that to an extent, but it's not as helpful as you might think. I mean, everyone has different body language. Everyone means different things with different tones. Imagine living in a world where people speak French, Spanish, German, and English, but everyone takes different words from each of those languages. So one person might use nouns from French and verbs from German. Another person uses nouns from German and verbs from French. And you have to talk to them in the same mix-up that they talk to you with. So you need to know all four of those languages, but also remember which words from each of those languages to use with each person.
Wow.
That's, to a degree, what I find. It's not a perfect description of what's going on, but it's as close as I've been able to come to put it into words right now.
Wow, that's got to be challenging, but I could see how it's refreshing once you understand. Now you know you can. It's learnable.
Yeah, once you know that the language is out there, that these are things you need to pay attention to, you can start to work on. And until then, you're just missing complete parts of an interaction and not necessarily realizing what they are or why they matter.
Because you know what to pay attention to now.
It to a degree.
Yeah.
I still miss stuff, I'm sure, but I have a greater percentage of it.
Oh, excellent. Okay, so keep going. This looks like a little checklist that you've developed here, right?
Well, actually, we did a little research on how to organize this in the most listener-friendly way. And one of the sites that was very helpful in organizing this information was autismhelp.org. Mm. And they actually have a specific link for adults, and that was a resource that we were going to mention. So again, that's www.autism-help.org. /adults/ All right. Paul, you're the computer guy. You read off.
Well, it's autism-help.org/adults-diagnosis-Asperger's, A-S-P-E-R-G-E-R-S, .htm3. Are you sure that's right and it's not an L?
I just copied and pasted it.
.htm3.
It's a family squabble here. Can you believe it? Live on the air.
Well, let me tell you this, though. If you go to the autismhelp.org, you'll be able to click a link to it.
I was going to suggest that.
I'm sure you can just Google the site.
But anyway, back to what we were talking about. Yes, and they had a very nice, I think that would be a very good resource for listeners, actually, just to go to that and be able to see some bullet points, these things that we're talking about. I think it's really important.
And that's what people need, right? I mean, credible resources. And we've talked on other shows about somewhat difference of philosophy between RDI and perhaps other styles. And so it's good to understand that in itself, because if you don't know something exists, you don't know if that solution begins with maybe outdated information versus,
right,
hey, new stuff.
Well, this is pretty accurate. And again, it's not super detailed, but it's enough for a person to look at it and say, wow, I can, you know, relate to some of these things. And we were talking about, before we got into the
website,
my little mishap there, you know, about the idea of social motivation and being able to keep up and process information. It's really important if you're a listener right now who knows an adult who has autism or you think they may have autism, is patience. Pacing is really important, and I had to just throw that in there because listening to Paul's description of the French and the German and all that, I can't imagine how exhausting it would be to participate in what I might consider a very simple interaction. And in the experience I've had, a lot of the adults I work with, they often get very tired after interactions and they need to rest. And I would just encourage people out there who know individuals who experience that to honor that and let them rest, because it's hard work to decode all of that.
And that's what you're really doing, is decoding.
Decoding, and it's an active process.
It's somewhat on a conscious level, rather unconscious, right? Partly.
Yeah, there's a significant part of it that, especially at first, was conscious. Some more of it has moved to, I guess I'd say habitual, because it's not being interpreted anymore, so I find I make mistakes because I just have an expectation that I didn't have before. But that you get into the habit of doing it a certain way for certain people, and it's less draining around people that I'm familiar with.
Paul's very patient with me.
Yes, I could tell. He was trying to rescue
and
there on the website.
That.
Yes, and when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with Kim Isaac and Paul Loudon, Understanding Autism, and we'll be right back.
Weidenauer, Heighton & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Weidenauer, Heighton & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status. Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Understanding Autism, starring Kim Isaac and Paul Loudon. We've been talking about really how to understand and recognize certain behavioral things, that maybe thinking styles that could lead to maybe a diagnosis. And Kim, why don't you continue with your description?
Yes. Well, we just went through the category of social communication, and we sort of eased into another category that's listed as social understanding. And that really involves, we just started to talk about it a little bit before the break, but understanding things like double meanings, you know, underlying emotional context, taking language maybe very literally instead of seeing some of the flexibility in that. In fact, a theme that you're going to notice emerge as we talk about these three things is in the area of flexibility and being able to think flexibly about communication and actually all channels of communication as it relates to social, you know, receptive and expressive, actually. Some people may find small talk and chatting very difficult or pointless. What the point would be.
What is the point?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. I have a very good friend, and if she may be listening, and I'm not going to say names, but she is on the spectrum. And, you know, every time we talk, I'll say, oh, hey, how are you? And she kind of has a reaction to that every time when I say, how are you? And she goes, I don't even know how to answer that. What does that mean? How are you? And we kind of laugh about it now, where we realize it's just like a social thing we do. And so we're kind of being playful about it, and we're coming up with new things.
Actually,
to say
it's
to
a
each
good
other.
Point, though. I mean, when you go and shake someone's hand, it's automatic. You usually go, hey, how are you? You know, like,
what does it mean?
Yeah, what is? I mean, if you really break it down,
it's always seems strange to me. When someone walks by me, just some random person, and says, what's up, or how are you, or something, and they're gone before it's even possible for them to respond. It's just a greeting. It's replaced hi with a few extra words, but it doesn't actually mean how are you.
You know what I think it is? I think it's like a filler because of uncomfortability. You walk past someone. Is that possible?
Well, I just like the social nod myself, you know?
Yeah, that's sort of cool. I like that, too, the social nod.
I think it's a little more, you know, refined than sup.
Yeah. Well, how about this one?
I've never seen Paul do the nod. Do it again.
Hey, it was a good one, too.
Very trendy.
How about this? If you're...
if I had a hat, I'd tip it.
How about this? If you're in a group event, and then you say hi to someone, and then about, you know, 20 minutes later, you walk by that person, what do you do again? Usually you go, hi again.
Hey. I know. These are all the funny little things we do that are very difficult to describe to people and give rules for. I don't even know why we do this, you know, but it's funny because, so anyway, now when I talk.
And that's one question I always ask about things is why. I have sort of I always want to know why. And that's very hard for a lot of things because it's just because.
And, you know, on this line, though, this is actually really important, the why, and also the why in combination with all these social rules that a lot of times we try to teach the younger children with autism is, you know, if it makes no sense to them. And part of it is doesn't even make sense to us, but we also know that emotionally it does something for the other person. And that's a difficult thing for people with autism to be mindful of or even understand what that would be and why. You know, the emotional feedback, to walk by someone and not do that, a person could interpret that nonverbal action as rude or stuck up, or, you know, so there are actually internal social emotional reasons why we do those things. It's just very difficult to explain something like that to a person with autism because they don't always see that underlying context.
Well, that's like some of the examples you have here of both social understanding and social communication, which really are two sides of the same thing. It's, you know, what to say and understanding what they're saying to you.
Right.
Include things like difficulty making eye contact or repetitive speech. And you mentioned the small talk and chatting. And a lot of that is just not seeing the value in it to other people, that it's an expectation. And I think a lot of people have it, people on the spectrum and off, that other people react or value the same kinds of things you will. And one of the big things is for a lot of people, there's enough overlap that you may not value all of the same things to the same degree, but eye contact still has some value to most people. But someone on the spectrum may say, well, I'm talking with words. Why do my eyes matter? Why do I need to be looking at them while they're talking to me?
Right.
And so there's more of a disconnect there, and it can create a larger degree of discomfort because more things don't quite seem right about this person.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting, and then, you know, really, there's no meaning except the meaning you give to something, if you think about it. And if someone that doesn't have eye contact, there's a sort of a stereotypical meaning like, oh, you know, what are they hiding?
Or they aren't paying attention.
Exactly. You know. And that may...
But I pay attention with my ears.
Yeah, exactly. But that's really... You hit it right on the head. And in a school situation, mm-hmm. for anyone in school, if a little kid is looking up or his eyes are wandering around and the teacher gets angry because they don't think the kid's paying attention... Maybe that's how they process information, and it's really unfair for the teacher not to know that and not to right. pick that up. Am I right?
And a lot of these skills are learned socially, that it's social pressure that teaches you very young that you're supposed to look at the person who's talking to you. And these are things that, you know, because of social deficits, you aren't going to pick up.
Now, it's important, too. Now, you know, teaching, you know, why is it important to look at someone when you talk to them? It's a sign of respect and all that stuff. The key thing there is, though, is it's assumed that when you're teaching kids these things, that the mental processes are there to a degree and developing to understand that they're going to learn the underlying meaning of to why that's important.
Well, for example, you just said it's a sign of respect. Well, what if I think the person knows I respect them? Then, you know, my assumption might be that they will know I respect them and will not assume I'm being disrespectful by looking away, which isn't always true. So, I mean, it's again, you know, there are hidden assumptions in almost everything that mm-hmm. are very hard to overcome when trying to communicate and help someone who's suffering from this kind of thing, because you don't think the same way they do.
Right.
And so, you know, if you're trying to explain to your child or if you're trying to look at it yourself, if you have it, and you're like, well, okay, I need to do these things because they value them. It's very difficult to think the same way they do to understand why they value them and teach yourself to do them regularly.
And it's really important along the lines of eye contact, because that is what you would say like an observable sign that diagnosticians would consider in a diagnosis. People who have an inability, well, or supposedly an inability to make eye contact. It's really important to understand, though, that eye contact is not just a skill or a behavior. We're making eye contact because part of the eye contact is taking in the nonverbal information, taking in the information that the person is actually giving back. And I think that sometimes in certain kinds of you know, lessons and treatments, people think that if they teach eye contact, that the mental processes will follow. But a person who doesn't understand why to make eye contact in the first place, I mean, I've literally worked with dozens of people that have learned to make the eye contact, but they're not receiving the information. They're doing the skill, they're following the rules, but they're not getting back what they're supposed to get back. It's much more important to convey the feedback than to demand the behavior.
Nicely said. Wow, that could be a book. You know, and as you're talking about this, you mentioned flexibility. I'm going to throw in a thing called sensory acuity, and that's really what you're talking about, is watching in a way that you're going to get that sensory data to be able to interpret how the other person's responding. I know a great therapist always said there's no such thing as inflexible patients, only inflexible therapists. And if you think about that, there's no such thing as inflexible communicators or communicatees only communicators. You know what I'm saying? The responsibility is on you, if you really look at it, to be able to pick up this information and get through to someone in the style they're trying to
Well, I think that goes along with the idea of patience. And also, I like to really throw in the idea of curiosity. If you're interacting with a person who maybe is giving observable signs that you might interpret as disrespectful or, you know, whatever, I mean, I like to go the route of curiosity. You know, is everything okay? Are you? I can't really tell. You know, sharing perspectives and not immediately putting a judgment is a really valuable thing for the community to remember. There are a lot of people out in the community who have autism. It's actually almost everywhere I go these days, in the airports and grocery stores, I'm seeing people. And it's really important to remember, when you see those behaviors that maybe look a little bit different, whether it's lack of eye contact or, you know, whatever else you're seeing, remember that it's not an intentional communication to you in terms of a disrespect. It's information on how they're processing and what they understand about certain social communication.
You know, that makes sense, because what if you took it personal and you got mad, and you get mad at something you shouldn't even be close to getting mad at?
Well, and also just having some, you know, beyond tolerance and acceptance of just people that are different, but really appreciating what these people of all ages go through every day just to get through the day. You know, these kids and adults, they work 10 times as hard as we have to, because these processes are not background processes for them. They have to actively pursue them and work so hard to interact. And I think that we take that for granted.
So at some point, then, what you're doing is they're consciously breaking it down, hoping to put it into the unconscious so you don't even have to think about it. So you're building a skill from conscious to unconscious.
Well, and the more that you practice something, and I was very happy to hear that Paul described this a little bit, is the idea eventually is for some of these things that we're teaching individuals to become habitual, because that's what they are for us. They're background processes for us. We don't even have to think about thinking about them or doing them. They're running in a background fashion. And for people on the spectrum, it's an active process to learn these things, and over time the idea is that it'll become more habitual, to where it doesn't have to feel so hard and things make better sense.
And if you think about it, for anyone is just trying changing a habit consciously, it's very tough.
Very tough. And I bring this up because I think as a community we need to be supportive of people that might be, you know, exhibiting different kinds of observable behavior, and not to necessarily assume they're bad kids or disrespectful teenagers, or, you know, I'm not saying they aren't out there. There are. But I think it's important to approach it with the attitude of patience and curiosity more than an immediate judgment.
That is great. And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with Kim Isaac and Paul Loudon. This is Understanding Autism. This is really good stuff, valuable for everyone and anyone. And we'll be right back.
Are you able to ensure the safe driving and productivity of your employees? I'm Kara Lee with GPS Heroes, and with our plug-and-play GPS device, you can set geofences, get speeding alerts, and a full report card each week with driver reports and mileage, all to your computer or handheld device. It's easy to get and easy to use, in real time, with no service contracts. Just go to gpsheroes.org/21 and order yours today. That's gpsheroes.org/21.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Is it important for you to develop a financial plan without the potential conflict associated with commission sales? As a fee-only financial planner, I am paid by you and only you, my client. I'm not compensated in any way by the recommendations I provide. Have you heard the phrase, people do not plan to fail, they fail to plan? My experience has shown that this is too often true when considering one's financial future. If you're ready to take action, call me, Bob Berger, Certified Financial Planner and Certified Divorce Financial Analyst, directly at 602-235-0336. We'll discuss your financial situation and review some small or perhaps large changes that will help you obtain the financial future you desire. Don't let the lack of a plan affect your family's financial future. Call me, Bob Berger, at 602-235-0336 for a free consultation. Again, Bob Berger, Certified Financial Planner, 602-235-0336.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Understanding Autism, starring Kim Isaac and Paul Loudon. This is very important. We've been discussing so many ways to understand, so people, the listeners, can understand what's going on. Let's go to another one of the triads, I believe, imagination.
Well, we found it described as imagination. We're not entirely comfortable with that term. Inflexibility might be a better one. It basically relates to the fact that many people on the spectrum tend to suffer from a rigidity, an inability to change structure or problems with sequencing tasks or otherwise, just changing their routine in a lot of cases. So it's not an ability to come up with new ideas, but rather to see that things can happen in a different way or be interpreted in a different way. And, you know, I don't know exactly why it's believed this is the case, but I know that from my perspective, a lot of times it was that I didn't understand why it should be a different way. That the people communicating said, we're changing this, but didn't relate to me reasoning that made sense to me. That so you have this degree of inflexibility, but from my perspective at least, it's like someone saying, well, we're going to walk on our hands from now on. That doesn't make any sense to me, so I don't want to do it. And, you know, these were other things.
You see that withdraw. When people see people with autism withdraw or flee, a lot of the kids, we have a lot of runners, they'll flee. If something is unclear or too overwhelming, it's not out of the ordinary for a person not to feel comfortable participating and choose not to. And I think that that's misunderstood as well. It looks like we have a call.
Well, let's go to line one. Gail from Escondido. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi, Gail.
Hello.
Hi, Kim and Paul.
Hello.
What am I, chicken liver?
Kim, Paul, and Dave.
There we go.
I get nervous when I call into these shows.
That's okay. Everything's okay. So, you got a few questions.
Yes. My question is, like, I am sitting here with my client, and I have a question, and so does Pete. So, my question is, what book did you read, Paul, that helped you at the very understand that maybe you had Asperger's?
Actually, it was, what, 5 years ago now, 6 years ago now, because I was diagnosed at 23, so it was a little before that. It was an article online. There's a techie website I read called Slashdot, and at the time, Asperger's was sort of popular as an idea as sort of the techie disease, something that a lot of people who were interested in computers were suffering from. You know, and so there was an article it was an article on probably BBC or some other major news site that was linked there. And so I just found it through that. And when I found that I related so well to this article, I actually stopped researching it at the time because I didn't want to sort of convince myself that I had it and start living what I thought it was before I actually talked with an expert on it. So once I saw a relationship there, I stopped myself from learning too much more further until I could talk with an expert.
Well, that was a very thorough answer. Thank you very much. Well, my client has read a few books he wanted to share with you. One of them is called Developing Talents, Careers for Individuals with Asperger's Syndrome and High Functioning Autism. And that one is by Temple Grandin and Kate Duffy. Another one is Getting to Grips with Asperger's Syndrome, Understanding Adults on the Autism Spectrum by Carol Hagland. And then the last one is The Complete Guide to Asperger's Syndrome by Tony Atwood. And he wanted me to share those resources.
Well, thank you. We really appreciate that. And actually, we also, I just want to mention, we're going to be posting resources on our Facebook page. We had planned to discuss some resources in greater detail, but since we're running low on time, Gail, I want to add these resources to our Facebook page, if that's okay with you and your client.
Sure, that'd and be great. I don't want to keep you because you're giving such great information. I'd like to hang up so I can keep listening.
Oh, no, we really appreciate you calling in. And again, just to all the other listeners, definitely want you all to check out our Facebook page, Understanding Autism, and we're going to be posting a summary of today's show and also resources on how to self-advocate and some ideas on where to go and what to do if you find out you have a diagnosis. And it looks like we have another call.
Great. Goodbye. I'll let you take your other call.
Thank you so much, Gail.
Thank you, Gail. And let's go to line two. We have Daniel from Phoenix. How are you, Daniel?
Hi, Daniel.
Hello?
What's your question?
Can autism affect job prospects?
That's a very interesting question. Actually, I have some very positive news about that. I recently discovered that there are companies now who are looking for people on the spectrum. That because we have uniquely different talents and interests and capabilities to neurotypical people, sometimes we're better suited for certain types of tasks. What this means is that looking forward, we may see many more companies that want to hire people with certain types of autism. So, yes, it can, but in a good way.
Does that answer your question, Daniel? Does that make sense?
Yes, that does.
Yes, I think you should be very encouraged. I think that it's...
I'm very encouraged.
Oh, good. How have you liked the show so far today?
Good.
Yeah, thank you so much for calling. Do you have any other questions?
No.
Okay, thanks so much, Daniel.
Thank you, Daniel. Call in again.
Thank you so much. Wow, that's so encouraging. I love how, you know, it's framing it in a positive. It gives courage, hope, and faith to people, everyone, actually. And that was nice. And it makes a lot of sense, Paul, what you said. You said uniquely different talents. And it makes so much sense, doesn't it?
Well, that's definitely one way to think of it, is that it's not necessarily an impairment, but a different way of thinking. And once you reframe it as that, you can sort of work at it from a different direction.
And all behaviors are useful in certain contexts, if you look at it that way. Okay, so let's keep going, because these are very good questions and great answers, too,
by the way. We love callers. Yes, well, we were talking actually just before the call about...
Inflexibility. But I think I mostly covered what I wanted to say about it, that it basically boils down to, from my perspective, a lack of understanding as to why change is important, so there's a resistance to change. Mm-hmm. I think everyone suffers from this, but because a lot of times one of the reasons change is important is a social reason, you know, we're missing some of those cues there again.
I like to think of the analogy, too, and I've used this with different clients, but... You know, think about the complexities of multi-channel communication, nonverbal, you know, facial, postural, gestures, all of that, as a professional basketball game. And I like to think of it as all of, you know, these professionals have spent many, many, many years developing and fine-tuning their fundamental skills, along with just learning the rules of the game. And it would be like, you know, for me, who's not skilled in basketball at all, if I were sitting there on the sidelines in the middle of a professional game and the coach said, hey, go in and play, I would be either paralyzed with fear and afraid, run out of the stadium. I mean, I would definitely have a withdraw response because I wouldn't feel competent. Now, if the coach came up to me at halftime and said, hey, I want to spend a few minutes with you and teach you how to dribble, my response would be different. It's really important to remember that everybody has the ability to, these individuals have the ability to learn these things. It's a matter of how we present them and our pacing and breaking them down and giving them that patience and space and clarity that they need to actually understand what it is they're supposed to be doing before throwing them into the game.
And what you're saying also is really holding the space of possibilities for others, because so many people may say, hey, it's not going to work, whether it's the therapist or or the someone on this autism spectrum. And once you have that in your mind, that there's no hope, there's no hope. You have to believe at least there is hope.
Absolutely.
And people, I don't think people would off the bat really feel that. I mean, it's this, if you don't understand something, it can be scary, and an automatic response again would be maybe a shutdown, a depression. But if you do reframe it and think of it as, you know what, there's a lot of information out there. There are people that are working very hard in the professional community to share knowledge and information and to collaborate. And I also just want to state again, since we just have a couple minutes, please check out our Facebook page, Understanding Autism. We're going to post resources for individuals, adults who either just got diagnosed or feel that they may have a diagnosis. We're going to post some of these reading resources and also a little bit about the company that Paul mentioned that he just found out about. Maybe the link that you saw it on, or
if I can find it again.
We'll
honestly,
find
it was something I stumbled across a few days ago. And
we'll Google it. We'll find it.
Just happened to have a question about.
So I want people to know there will be a place to see additional resources.
Well, we'd love to make it more than just a place to see resources. We'd love to have people communicating with
and
us
share.
There, questions they'd like to hear about on the show, or topics that they find important that we might consider bringing up on the air or discussing
yes.
more thoroughly on the
yes.
air. So we'd love to. Open a two-way channel of communication
Absolutely.
With our audience.
We want to collaborate, and we'll definitely interact with you. So Understanding Autism on Facebook.
So it's already a page.
It's already a page. We have several people on board. We'd love to start discussions, and please share your thoughts and comments and questions, and we'd be happy to help.
And how else can they get in touch with you and Paul?
They can get in touch with Paul and I at either rdiarizona@yahoo.com. Or you can call at 602-481-8925.
Nice. And can you believe it's at the end of the show? However, tomorrow from 2 to 3, we will do
back.
This again with a different topic. Do you want to surprise people with the topic or
well,
tell them?
Well, we're going to be talking about some recent news relating to autism. Just it's general topics that we found interesting that are forward research and new technologies to help people with autism.
Communicate.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Kim Isaac. Thank you, Paul Loudon. And we'll see you tomorrow, 2 to 3. This is going to be great because more information equals more awareness and more possibilities and opportunities. Everyone have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow. From 2 to 3 and then 3 to 4. Bye-bye.